listening to America Out Loud, and this is LA Miracle Cure. And I am Barbara, and I'm here with my guest host, Katarina.
Barbara, I am so excited to be here today.
Well, I'm excited to have you here today, too. And we're in South Los Angeles. I mean, the Mecca of the world, right?
Always the Mecca of the world.
Yes. And we happen to be at a dispensary. This discussion is about medical cannabis, whom it serves, and who is serving it. We are here at this dispensary, and you know what? I was just wondering, you know, because I suffer from a really bad case of arthritis.
Oh.
And I was wondering if I should get a card.
Well, you know what? I don't even know how one would go about getting a card. Like, you're talking about a card to be able to purchase medical marijuana, right?
Absolutely.
How does one get a card?
Well, I don't know. Maybe our guest knows how we can get a card, because we need a card.
I need a card.
How do you get a card?
Well, you would approach your doctor or find a doctor that is in the industry, in the medical cannabis industry, who writes recommendations. You will go to that doctor. That doctor then will evaluate you to see what your ailment is once discussing that with the doctor. And upon his recommendation, he will write you a recommendation to give you a medical cannabis card that you will be able to take to your local dispensary and be able to receive your medicine.
Your medicine. Mr. Virgil Grant, you have many, many years in this industry, so we've got to become your new best friends.
Yes, been here since 2002 operating. I started out in 2002 as a patient advocate, and then for the next 2 years, in 2004, I opened up my first dispensary in the city of Compton.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Katarina, because soon, as of January 1st, recreational cannabis will be available to those in California over 21. So there is a definitive difference between those who are patients and those who care to do this recreationally. And we're going to delve into all these things on LA Miracle Cure. I am so excited to introduce my friend and champion for the medical cannabis industry in Los Angeles, better known as the King of LA. We are here with Mr. Virgil Grant. Virgil, welcome to LA Miracle Cure.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Of course, of course. Now, you know, I'm just in awe, first off, of the sacrifice that you have made and others like you in pioneering medicinal marijuana or cannabis to people who are suffering from cancer, from fibromyalgia, from arthritis, from stress. Give us a picture of who is your patient.
Well, my patients come in all different shapes, size, forms, backgrounds, social backgrounds. There is no face on who I could tell you what a patient looks like, because I always ask the question back in the early days, what does someone look like when they have cancer? What does someone look like when they have AIDS? What does someone look like when they have certain diseases, arthritis, certain back pains, you know, ailments? Sometimes it's hard to tell. They can look like a very healthy person. One of my AIDS patients was a very young and healthy young African-American male. He was worked out. He was in great shape, but he had HIV. And so you can't just tell by looking at someone. So it could be your next door neighbor. It could be the person across the street. It could be the soccer mom. It could be any one of us.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what I think our listening audience really wants to know is, how do you see yourself? And could you bring us forward from when you first started in this cannabis community serving medical marijuana? How did this first start for you?
Well, I hope at the end of this that people would begin to see or would finally see the sacrifices that people like myself in California, in Los Angeles, made to make sure that the world was able to participate in this industry. Started out in 2002 doing patient advocacy work. For 2 years, I did that, helping patients, educating patients, educating them on how to obtain cannabis, how to use cannabis for medicinal purposes, and just be able to access the medicine, which was one of the most crucial things back then, not only how to access it, but also how to carry it and travel with it. Because back then, and we're talking 2002-2003, where there was not a lot of education being provided to the patients or potential patients within the industry or the community as a whole.
The community as a whole, what I want to know is, how did you discover and really what was the passion behind wanting to promote medical marijuana? Because, you know, it's 2017, people are starting to understand that there are benefits around this. Were you doing it for the health benefits back then? Because it's been legal since 1995. Or were you doing it for the, you know, for the flashy fame back then? You got to be honest with us.
Absolutely not. And actually, just a quick correction. 1996 was when Prop 215 actually came into play. I watched it. I followed it. I studied. I did my research. I jumped in 2002 after those years of education moving forward to now help patients access this medicine. The reason I jumped in is because my community in the city of Compton, which where I lived and actually operated businesses for my dad in the city, there was no safe access to medical marijuana. The shops at that time was about six or seven of them, and they were in West Hollywood and Hollywood. There was nothing in the central Los Angeles, Compton, Watts, moving down to the South Bay area. There was nothing servicing that community. And so my thought is always looking at the financially disadvantaged communities, not having transportation and having to use public transportation. That was a key factor. And not having a lot of money. So I said, well, how can I service my community so they don't have to travel so far to receive this medicine and have it a good quality medicine at a low rate that it's affordable for a community that I live in? So that was my driver to opening up my first dispensary in 2004 in the city of Compton, 1321 East Compton Boulevard.
Wow. And you know what? That is a very interesting overview. Because we also know that there's a lot that plays into that, such as distribution, manufacturing, there's growing. I mean, there's a lot of loose hanging pieces that all have to come together, right?
Absolutely.
And it is still considered to be, even though there are patients benefiting, it is still considered a Schedule I drug.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people.
I'm just going to interrupt you guys there because I really think that there might be some people listening that don't know what a Schedule I drug is. Can you explain that a little bit before you get into it? What does that mean?
Yes, a Schedule I drug is the highest schedule that the federal government puts it. And if you look at, and you can research it, it's a brief Google on Schedule I drugs. It'll show you what's in the category of Schedule I. But let me also tell you that cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin, these are Schedule II drugs, not Schedule I, with Schedule I being the highest class. Why is marijuana in a Schedule I drug category? So, that's just a question I throw out to the audience to research for yourself. Why?
Why? I want to know why, absolutely.
Especially since it's organic. It's organic, it's a plant. Now, let me ask you this question, because I think our listening audience really wants to know. And by the way, we're on location right now live in Los Angeles, and this is LA Miracle Cure. We're talking with Virgil Grant, and there are new laws coming into play in California. As marijuana is going from a medical dispensary and rules and regulations and compliance to a recreational opportunity for people. So this is something that might bring, what would you guess? How much money could this bring annually? I've heard people throw out $5-6 billion first 2 years. What would you say in regards to Los Angeles?
Well, this industry has already surpassed that $5 billion mark, just where it stands. It'll surpass that by far. The revenue that the city will make is in the millions. We're talking down the line, we're talking almost $7 million revenue coming from the cannabis industry. LA being the largest cannabis production market in the world and the largest distribution market in the world, bar none, will receive that kind of money and tax benefit. But let me just kind of go to medical and recreational, because people are sometimes confused in that. We've had medical marijuana here in the city of Los Angeles or in the state of California for 21 years. That's a history nobody can speak towards. We'll now be having recreational marijuana. It does not take away medical. It just allows the recreational user to be involved as well. So we'll still have our medical marijuana patients as well as our recreational users.
Yeah, and I think that's the key right now. And I think, of course, that's why more society is getting involved, because of the decriminalization element, right? And I think part of what really had hit and is still hitting the communities, the lower middle class communities, is this sort of what I think of as institutionalized corruption. You know, this was pegged as something illegal. You could go out and drink 7 bottles of vodka, no problem. But heaven forbid you took a swag or a puff of something, right? Boom, you're in jail. I mean, come on now.
Right, as much as a mustard seed in your pocket in Las Vegas could get you 6 months to a year in prison. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, before we go to break, I want to talk a little bit about what it was like when you opened your dispensary. Did you partner with a doctor that was giving prescriptions? How did that piece work? And could you kind of unpack your client, the clientele base, others that was doing it at the same as you? And then tell us a little bit about what happened. Was it happy business?
Okay, so when I first opened up, me being the only dispensary located, let's say, south of Olympic Boulevard, there was nothing on that side and nothing coming up through the IE in San Diego. So my patient base was just that. If you could picture that wide demographics from the South Bay area, this was before Long Beach or any other dispensaries had opened up in surrounding cities. I was in existence in the city of Compton. So my patient base came from far and wide and were of many different backgrounds, ethnic, racial, and different groups. So I was receiving patients from as far as Hollywood to as far as San Diego County. And my thing was making sure that I had the highest and the best quality medicine at the cheapest price to make sure that I could service patients who were less fortunate to afford the prices that they were being charged back then.
Well, that goes to show you. Now, we know that the voters made this legal. It was California, and there are also 28 other states.
Absolutely.
That practice medical cannabis currently out in our union. And so I think people are really miseducated and misinformed about exactly what does medical marijuana do, what is cannabis, and what kind of different strains affect different patients. Now, in a dispensary like where we are now, you have people who are trained to give this information. So it's not just like I go there and I say, give me this, and I'm not sure. So there are people that are trained. Tell us a little bit about the training.
Well, that's what drove a lot of people to my locations. And back then I had six locations stretching from Compton to the Valley. And that's what drove everyone to my facilities, because of the education piece that came with it. It wasn't like, here's your cannabis, see you later, goodbye. It was finding out who the patient was, what their ailments were, and what best suit them, whether it was a sativa, an indica, or a CBD, a hybrid. What did they need for their ailment? And so we made sure that we were highly educated, and that I highly educated my staff to be able to make sure that it best fit the patient's need.
The need, and it's, you know, it's about need. I had a friend when I was growing up whose mother had MS, and she was really far down the track. And she was given some medical marijuana, and I just remember going over to the house when I was young and really seeing how at ease it was putting her. And so for me, from a young age, you know, I made that mental connection that this is not necessarily bad because somebody on a big ivory tower told me it was bad. I need to do a little research and understand what is it possibly offering me. So I'm so glad that you did that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we have a couple of other questions about this. And in our next segment, what I'm really dying to know, and our listening audience, I think, would be edified by knowing the real sacrifice that an owner-operator in the city of Los Angeles like yourself has made in order for people who are suffering from AIDS, from cancer, from MS, from arthritis, patients that rely on you, rely on the privilege to come because the voters say it's okay, and gain their medical cannabis, their tinctures, their salves, their oils. I mean, it's much more
Absolutely.
Than just a bud to walk away with. There are many, many products on your shelves, and it's a whole education. And I think in this series, we will attempt to cover exactly all the things that are available that cannabis has become. I mean, how many products do you think that you have currently that people can tap into?
We have close to 100 different styles of products that anyone can tap into. Like you said, from tinctures to concentrates to edibles to salves to drops, you know, all kind of topicals. It's not just about smoking, as people would say. It's not just about smoking weed. It's actually it has medicinal benefits and medicinal properties that can help people who truly need it for medical purposes.
Well, we commend you, and I tell you, the cleanliness and the visual that I have seen in the dispensary is just mind-blowing. All the different products. I mean, the shelf is like a pharmacy.
Well, and it's so fun to be here on location with LA Miracle Cure. We're happy to be here, and it's fun behind the scenes, so don't go anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in our next segment, we're going to be talking with Virgil Grant. He's going to tell us a little bit about the sacrifices that he's made in owning and operating a medical cannabis dispensary in the city of Los Angeles. We're also going to hear about the new laws that are coming to California, and we're so excited to be a part of America Out Loud.
We're a new breed of talk radio with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio. Shows that impact your health, honor our heroes, political talk, shows that inspire you to live a truly authentic life. You can hear your favorite shows on networks like iHeartRadio or AHA Radio, or just download our free apps on both Android and Apple. Well, we are proud to have you as one of our growing family of listeners. We are the Vision of the Voices, AmericaOutLoud.com.
And so we're back. I'm Barbara, my guest host, Katarina, and of course, our special guest is Virgil Grant, and we are here live on location with LA Miracle Cure at a dispensary in central Los Angeles. We were talking a little bit about your serving patients in the industry of cannabis. We were talking a little bit more about how you acquired a medical card to be able to be served. We were talking a little bit about the education. So tell us a little bit about the piece about how doctors work with you and give you clarity and give permission to patients to explain that for us.
So I really want to take the listener back to the beginning, because to understand moving forward, you have to understand the history of medical marijuana. There were no doctors that researched or did any research towards this. The federal government does not give out any grants or authorization to do any research on marijuana, period. So this was something we had to do strictly from, trials and tribulations and trial and error. But we worked closely with doctors who have tested cannabis and worked with other patients to really get gain an understanding how indicas, sativas work. Through my research, information, and education, once a doctor has given a recommendation of what this patient has, we would sit down with the patient to find out what their ailment was. They would disclose that, and then we understood from our educated situation, knowing the difference on how sativas work, which keep you up, but also deal with pain, versus indicas, which are taken more at nighttime, which help you sleep. We understood how this works. CBDs, which give you no euphoric feeling, but deal strictly with things like epilepsy, seizures that may be caused because of that. So even though we're not dispensary owners or not doctors, we work closely with the doctors to gain that understanding of what's going on, just as pharmacists aren't doctors, but they still give out medicine and are able to tell a patient how to take this, how it may affect them, and so on and so forth. So through education and years of experience in this industry has afforded owners and operators like myself to be able to talk with the patient and find out what best suits their need.
So with all that said, wow, you're really servicing the community.
Yes.
So the dispensary really becomes the face of medical cannabis.
Absolutely.
And so how safe is it?
It's very safe. Now what we're doing as an industry, and we've done a lot of self-regulating, and we're talking about an industry that had no rules and regulations at that time, now coming into rules and regulations. We, the industry, understand how important lab testing is, how important safe access is, providing a safe and comfortable environment for patients to receive their medicine, and clean medicine as well. So we send our medicine, the growers send the medicine to labs, labs test it, and then it comes to the dispensary for distribution. And this is how that is set up to make sure that our patients receive clean medicine. And during testing, that'll let us know whether the medicine is clean or not.
And you know, what I wanna know when I'm looking at all this is, can someone overdose from marijuana?
No one can overdose. There is, in other words, overdose to what extent? Because when we talk of overdose has different levels. You can OD but not die. Then you can OD and die. So no one has OD'd and died from using cannabis, but someone has taken high levels of concentrates, which have taken them to a level of being uncomfortable and very uncomfortable, where they have to now relax and come down off of it, which takes a few hours. So as far as ODing and dying, no, it cannot happen.
So when you talk about ODing, because we know right now in America, one of our major problems is opioid addiction. And we know that with one surgery and one prescription from your medical professional, if you complete the course, then you can too be addicted to OxyContin, to Norcos, to hydrocortones, and all of the fentanyl,
Absolutely. All
of these drugs that are making money in the chain, but that are causing our citizens to die. So do you think that that is really the problem with marijuana?
Well, the marijuana has received a stigma due to lack of education and due to miseducation. And so, one, marijuana is not addicting. Marijuana is not a gateway drug.
What do you mean by gateway drug?
Well, people think that you'll start with marijuana and then you'll progress to cocaine, then you'll progress to heroin, and then you'll do that. That's just not how it works. That sounds like a person who just wants to experiment with drugs. And they're going to try whatever they can try, even if it's snorting crushed up pills or taking potpourri and all of the crazy, ridiculous things that sometimes youth do. But it's not a gateway drug. I know people who drink alcohol and that's all they do. They do not like marijuana. I know people who smoke cigarettes and don't want anything else. They don't want alcohol, marijuana, or anything else. I know people that have smoked cocaine and they won't try heroin or they won't try marijuana. They do not like it. They don't like alcohol. So to say that marijuana is a gateway drug is absolutely absurd. It's all up to the individual. I went to college and my major was psychology. So I understood and can speak towards the individual, not the drug, but the individual. People, when are addicted to drugs, the first thing they do when they go to rehab, they're evaluated by a doctor, a psychiatrist. That's because there's something going on with this person internally, not personally, physically, but it then becomes physical through the mental capacity of what they're dealing with. And then they reach out in different ways, be it drugs, be it you name it, sex, be it gambling, be it whatever becomes addicted, overeating in their life, purging, binging, you name it. There are a whole host of things, but that's psychological.
Absolutely.
And so you have to deal with it psychologically to every individual and find out why they are doing what they are doing. But it's not the physical marijuana that is causing people to do the things that they do. So,
well, you know, you've really given us a real bird's eye view of exactly what we should anticipate as a community when we drive by the dispensary. Now we kind of understand what it is. But what we don't know yet is what sacrifice did you personally make and your family make? I understand that during this period of time, it was people were being raided by the federal government.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about
during the years of the Bush administration, that administration was full on attack of the California, the city of Los Angeles mainly, medical marijuana dispensaries, period. We were being harassed. We received, our landlords received DEA landlord threat letters threatening to take away their property and prosecute them, imprison them. We were raided by the federal government constantly, where the federal government would come into our locations, take all of the medicine out of there, all of the money, seize our bank accounts, raid our homes, and just totally harass us. So during that time, we were operating in fear that when is it going to be our day to get raided? When is the federal government going to come kick our door in?
But Virgil, that's what I'm confused about. You had a door, you had a business that was a legal business. You had to get a business license. So how
Absolutely.
The heck could they be coming after you? That's where the disconnect happens in my mind.
Well, this is something hard to explain to a lot of people because to me there is no explanation. Yes, we were licensed by the city of Los Angeles. Yes, we registered with the city of Los Angeles as medical marijuana facilities. And we were given the authority to operate within the Los Angeles boundaries to service our patients as medical marijuana providers. And yes, we still were harassed by the federal government. People say to this day, as we can say now, it's a Schedule I drug. It is illegal by the federal government. but it's approved by 29 states in our country. So there has been a disconnect between local and federal, which has put us in the harm's way. I myself have been raided on several occasions. I've been indicted one time. I've spent 72 months in federal prison for owning and operating legitimate medical marijuana facilities.
That is unbelievable.
So when people talk about sacrifices, you know, and you look at the Denvers, the Washingtons, and the Oregons and other states, what sacrifice are you willing, really, truly willing to give? Because California, LA has given many sacrifices. I was raided once, reopened, raided a second time, and then indicted. I was then put on pretrial, which you wear an ankle bracelet, so you're monitored and tracked every, you know, your movement 24 hours a day. And I still operated my facilities. This is the sacrifice that I made for my patients to receive the medicine that they needed. There were a lot of patients, because at this time I had six locations depending on this medicine for their medicinal purposes.
So when someone has the medical cannabis card and it's prescribed by the doctor, then as the collective, you represent maybe 250 patients. And so you stock your shelves with the amount that allows you to grow as per patient, or?
Yes, and so at that time, the average shop had anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 patients. So we're talking LA. Our numbers are always larger than other states because of our densely populated community. I probably had 1,500 patients times six for each location. And so the amount of medicine that I had to carry for each location, of course, would have to service those patients throughout the week.
How did that decimate you? And then what I really admire about you is that time you used to come back, and now you are making the laws. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Well, during the raids, you know, they seized all of our bank accounts. They actually pulled my wife in on the indictment to make me plead or take a plea deal. So I did, to get her out of the way. She never worked at the shop ever. She worked for AAA for 8 years at that time, had been 8 years on her job with AAA. So she never worked at the shop, but because she her handwriting was on one of the checks that I used to pay my lease with or pay the Southern California Edison bill, that's how they pulled her in. And so they brought her in on the indictment, 41 count. So I was a 41 count indictment, conspiracy to distribute 100 kilograms or more of marijuana THC product, money laundering, and promotional money laundering, which were the two throwaway charges. So the federal government always throws the book at you, hoping something would stick, and they would drive on whatever would stick. Well, there was no money laundering, and there was no promotional money laundering, because I had bank accounts that had the names of my businesses attached to it, which I paid my taxes on. So, of course, there was no money laundering. I did not put money somewhere else. I put it directly into the bank, a federally insured bank. So you could see where the money went, just as they were able to seize it because they saw it.
Exactly.
What I want to know, Virgil, is how did you not give up? Like, you got out of prison. Why did you not just go hide in the desert somewhere? Why come back and keep fighting?
I'm a very determined person. I don't believe in letting someone tell me what I can and can't do. You know, my mom always taught me you could do whatever you want to do. This is what I wanted to do. This is what I love to do and what I enjoy to do. And I wasn't going to let any entity tell me that I could not do it and that I could not be successful at it and that I could not help people that needed this help. So with that being said, my mindset while I was in prison was one that I should never be here. This should have never happened, but it did. What am I going to do to change things? Well, I'm going to get out, jump back in front of the line of the industry, and move this in the direction it should go in. And that's one, implement laws that actually reflect the people. Protection, which is licensing, making sure that it's the support of the state of California and the support of the city of Los Angeles and every other surrounding city that wants medical marijuana or recreational. I was determined to make sure what happened to me never happened to someone else. And so that was my driving factor to get back out and finish what I started in the beginning.
Well, you heard it right here on LA Miracle Cure. And we're so thankful for our network, America Out Loud, to give us this opportunity to be live in South Los Angeles. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We're here in South Los Angeles. I'm here with Virgil Grant and with, of course, our guest host, Katarina. And we've heard the story about Virgil's quest to serve his patients in a lower economic area of Los Angeles, what the struggle was. We heard about his testimony of how the federal government dehumanized him, but he still stood strong. We want to know a little bit about your leadership and where are you focusing your leadership, your energies right now? Are you part of any organizations? How is this all coming together as a group?
Yes, I am co-founder of California Minority Alliance, and I'm co-founder and president of the Southern California Coalition. Southern California Coalition was formed by about four of us, who ended up bringing the industry together as a whole. So we represent cultivators, manufacturers, distributors, lab testers, delivery service, and collective model. That's how we represent that within the SEC. And CMA, California Minority Alliance, represents the social equity of the cannabis industry. So that is a minority group who represents all of the minorities wanting to operate within the cannabis space, not just here in California, nationally, because we opened up a couple of chapters, Georgia, Ohio, Maryland, and getting ready to do Arkansas.
Wow, that is amazing. So as a board member, a chair, a president, what do you see happening after Measure M hit Los Angeles?
Whoa, what's Measure M?
Okay, so Measure M is an ordinance we put, we worked closely with Los Angeles City Council, our council president, Herb Wesson, and other city council members to put on a proposition that represented LA. We've had Proposition D, which D stands for Us Destructive. It destroyed the industry, and it destroyed a lot of communities because it was poorly written and implemented. We needed to get rid of Proposition D and bring in Proposition M. And Proposition M now represents licensing, taxation, social equity, and enforcement. And so we need to understand the first three components before we could even talk about enforcement. And so we had to make sure, one, that there was a licensing mechanism. So we've been operating for 21 years in the city of Los Angeles without what we consider to be a physical, substantial license. And so that's what Proposition M does. Also, it brings in taxation. Now, we were paying taxes 6% to the Office of Finance, but this is a taxation bracket that encompasses all components of the industry, because we only talk about the dispensary, but we never talk about, well, where does the product come from? Does it just fall out the sky and into the shops?
That's one of my questions, is what if there's these rogue shops, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's still an underground black market, or is there?
What's a rogue shop?
So yes, rogue shops are unlicensed, unauthorized facilities, which we call pop-up shops and rogue shops. This is what Proposition M will definitely control now. So if it's either you have a license or you don't. Like I say, you don't see rogue liquor stores popping up all over the place because they have a licensing. So this was something important that all the other propositions missed and that the industry did not get right. Well, stepping back out in front of the line, I knew what was super important, and one, licensure. Licensure now says you are licensed. And so these other pop-up shops can now be forcefully and aggressively gone after because they're plain illegal. And so now law enforcement has a clear pathway to enforcement. So this is what Proposition M does. And so what it does is it's a blessing to the communities, excuse me, that have complained about all of these pop-up shops. Because let's understand, there are 2,000 shops in the city of Los Angeles. There are only 187 of them that are pre-ICO, so city approved, considered city approved. So with Proposition M, it now opens up for licensure that you can apply, with the pre-ICO being the top tier, and then you have the social equity, the second tier, and then open licensing. So this is what Prop M represents.
How much would a license go for if I was an entrepreneur and I want to get into this space?
Well, so that was a big question in the beginning. And because myself and Donnie Anderson, my partner, were a part of this, we wanted to make sure that we always think about our community. So we wanted to make sure the barriers to entry were not over the top or too expensive. So $7,500. It would be your application fee. We didn't want our application fee to be $50,000, $30,000, because nobody has that kind of money on top of money that they would need to invest in the industry as far as get their shop going and all the money that they would need just to run a successful business.
So let me understand this, because this is the internet. And I'm sure there are entrepreneurs out there everywhere deciding to move to LA. I think they said that there were like 100 people a month that come to LA to become stars.
This is like the gold rush, right? Exactly. Back in the day, we're doing Wild Wild West.
Exactly. So I remember hearing some what are called Angelinos. I don't know if you know any Angelinos. But you will be an Angelino to have a business in Los Angeles. Explain that.
Absolutely. What we are doing, just as Denver, Washington, Colorado, everybody puts in a clause that you have to be a resident in order to own and operate within the state of California. We in California, from Sacramento on down to the localities, you have to be a resident. In Linwood, you had to be a resident. In Maywood, you had to be a resident. In Salinas, you had to be a resident. And all of the other places that have licensed throughout California are required that you are a resident in order to run and open a business within your municipality, your locality. And so this is something that's important because in the cannabis industry, we were all Angelenos. We were all locals. And so now to allow big business to come out of state, in the state, and take over an organic business that we created from the very start, we think would be a travesty. So we need to protect that.
So that brings the next question. All right. So we want to talk a little bit about Denver. But before we do, I want to know, what's holding Philip Morris back? Is it the fact that it's a Schedule I drug? So are we in a catch-22? Owner-operators need it to be a Schedule I to be entrepreneurs, but if it goes to free people that are already in jail or incarcerated because it's no longer Schedule I, then in comes the cavalry?
Yes, absolutely. And we've always thought about that as owners and operators. People say it's still a Schedule I drug, and we say, well, we've been operating for 21 years under a Schedule I drug category. And so yes, that is a reason why a lot of other big businesses have not just totally rushed in, because it's still a Schedule I drug. So we're kind of on the fence of wanting it not to be a Schedule I drug, but that's almost been our Achilles heel protection, in a sense, of keeping big business out and allowing us to continue to organically grow as, you know, small mom and pop businesses.
Well, you know, I don't know. I won't say I'm a lazy mom, but I will say I'm a modern mom, and I do order Uber Eats. So are you saying I can order Uber CB oil, or what do you think? What do you think about that?
Delivery service is a part of the woven fabric of our industry and licensure. So yes, you will be able to at one point in time, and this is once licensing becomes into play, and we're only months away from that. So yes, there will be licensure, and within that licensure is delivery service, and so that will be a part of our woven fabric of the industry, to where you will be able to order just like Uber Eats, just like a Uber driver, or any delivery service or things that are delivered to you. That will be something that we will provide, and that's a good thing to provide, because you may have hospice patients who are in wheelchairs or handicapped, or even our veterans who have, or are amputees. And of course, they need this for PTSD. They need this for anxiety. They need this for not to take 15 different medications that they will come out of the service taking. So yes, this is definitely will be a great service that we will provide.
Well, you know, now that I'm here, and I'm thinking about today, I don't know if you know Katerina, but this is the first day school started.
Huh?
And when I'm thinking about 2,000 dispensaries in the community, I'm thinking about how I didn't notice that this was a business when I drove by. But I have seen that our young people are walking up and down the streets. I have seen that some of the products look like gummy bears. Let me stop here. Look like gummy bears. Are they look? That some of the products look like edibles. Cupcakes and
lollipops,
and all this like really delicious stuff that looks like it's targeted toward kids. What would you say, as an expert in Los Angeles, are you going to be doing to protect our young people?
Well, let's be clear. First of all, this industry does not do anything that targets children. Those candy bars and some of the packaging are just cute, nice packaging for the consumer, not to entice kids. One, if you are a minor, you have to come in with an adult. and that adult is your caretaker. So say, for instance, if you have a kid that's going through chemotherapy and cancer, and they use cannabis edibles for to help them through their chemotherapy, they have to, one, come have a doctor's recommendation, and their mom or father has to be signed on to that recommendation so that the mom can come either with the child or without the child to receive their medicine. And so this is, when we talk about children, we have to understand this is a medicine and this is a medical marijuana industry as well.
You know, now, what, I'm sorry to interrupt for 1 second, but what I think is so crazy to what you just said, right? We have no issues with putting the onus on you and the medical marijuana industry and, you know, making sure our kids are protected. But hey, our kids can walk into McDonald's and be enticed with those Happy Meals and be eating carcinogenic shit, and we reward that behavior with the, you know, New York Stock Exchange. It's crazy to me, the systematic, you know, constitutionalized corruption that is taking place in this country. And I'm just so excited about the fact that you guys are helping to educate the rest of us on what medical marijuana really is all about.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because normally when I address a neighborhood council or I'm addressing other city councils in different cities that we work with and other localities, you know, I get a lot of community pushback because of the lack of education. And the first thing they say, what about our children? Well, let's just keep in mind, Prop 64, people say recreational. Well, it's called Adult Use of Marijuana Act, not Recreational Marijuana Act. Adult Use, 21 and up. So we're not targeting, they're not targeting their children. They're targeting adults 21 years and up. So what it does is it also enforces that you check license recommendations. So the kids shouldn't be getting access to cannabis, just like they shouldn't be getting access to alcohol. But we understand that children have ways of doing things and getting hold to certain things. It's also up to us as parents. And I'm a parent of 5 children, daughters ranging from 23 to 14. And none of them consume cannabis. None of them drink alcohol. So it's what you teach your children. And so we want to blame society on how our children are raised. No, it's up to you to raise your children and not let society raise your children, because I don't. And that's why I have 3 college grads and 2 in high school that are doing very well as honor roll students, because I teach my children. And they're very educated on cannabis.
Virgil, do you consume cannabis?
I actually don't consume cannabis.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, I've ran my dad's liquor stores for 15 years. I don't drink. I've been in the cannabis industry for well over 25 years, and I don't consume cannabis. But I did for medical purposes at one point in time of my life, and when my injury was... when I got well and I rehabbed my injury, I no longer consume cannabis.
Well, I have a question. And, you know, we've really unpacked this, but I really want you to talk a little bit now about how do you operate as a business when you can't bank or when there's a difficulty in banking? And how do you pay taxes? We do know that in Denver, out of 27 dispensaries that started out with 47 stakeholders in the beginning of January 2015, we now know there are somewhere around 800 million. They've got 928 dispensaries in the city of Denver. It's unbelievable. So now they're looking at their growth and they're paying pre-tax. Tell us a little bit about your struggle banking and taxing. How will that work?
So in the beginning, we were allowed to bank before the banks shut us off. Some of us were able to hold on to our bank accounts because the banks didn't reject us. So let's be clear on that. The banks didn't reject all of us. And then some other owners and operators got very creative with their banking. So they have a management company that manages their business that has a different name. So it's LVC Management Company. But it manages holistic caregivers. So as long as that doesn't show up in the bank as a medical marijuana facility name or one that resembles that, then it's not a red flag to the bank, and the bank will do business with that. And that company does business for its medical marijuana facility. But we do have banks that are now in organizations that are now wanting to come into the cannabis space and do banking for us, or allow us to be able to do banking. So,
well, yeah, when you get those kind of numbers that you were throwing around earlier, and the millions and the billions, I would assume there's some banks waking up.
Yeah, well, it was difficult because we had to take all cash to the State Board of Equalization. We would go up to even the Office of Finance in the city of Los Angeles. And if we had to pay our taxes, we're talking $60,000-$70,000 and some $80,000 in cash that the Office of Finance would have to sit there and count by hand.
Did you take it in ones?
Yes. So, yeah, that's funny. So, you know, wheelbarrows or carts or however we had to carry it in there, we were able to get our money to the Office of Finance. It made it very difficult for us to do normal business because most people would just wire in the money or have a cashier's check and so on and so forth. I think we are now far removed from that, and the state of California, as well as the city of Los Angeles, understands how important it is for banking. That's why Herb Wesson talked about the Bank of Los Angeles and opening up or having the Bank of Los Angeles to be able to take the money and do business with the cannabis industry.
LA Miracle Cure. You can check us out on the website, www.lamiraclecure.com, and you can always go to America Out Loud, www.americaoutloud, to see programming that will enhance you and give you information on what's happening right now. This is Barbara, Katarina, and thank you, Virgil.